about to talk contemporary dance, but before we talk contemporary dance, a little bit of the soundtrack to contemporary dance.
You could always have a heart attack or something, just to get yourself a bed for the night. You could lay your frozen hands on a light bulb or something, just to try to warm them up. Oh, oh, oh. On the streets of San Francisco, in a place so far from home. Oh, oh, oh. You could treat yourself to another facelift or something, or treat yourself to third-degree burns. You could just try to make sense of the senseless or something, or be just like a feather in my shoe. Oh, oh, oh. On the streets of San Francisco, in a place so far from my home. On the streets of all the stories I know, and it hits so close to home.
Well, that's a little bit to the soundtrack, or the soundtrack to Mary Mary. And I got that off a little YouTube clip. It features, well, it's based around the dance of Rodney Bell. He's a New Zealand dancer who spent a bit of time in the United States. He's disabled. He lost the use of his legs in an accident, but that didn't stop him from dancing. And Mary Mary incorporates his wheelchair into the act, and it's stunning to look at. Stunning. The lighting is stunning. The soundtrack there sounded a bit understated, but Malia Johnston, our contemporary dancer, is about to tell us why it's so special. Kia ora, Malia.
Kia ora, how are you?
I'm fine. Now, you're in the middle of a show, aren't you?
Yes, we are. We're in the middle of a tour, South Island, part of a tour across New Zealand with Mary Mary. And we've just been down to the Festival of Colour in Wanaka. And we're now in Invercargill. And yeah, so we've been on the road.
Is the show on tonight?
The show's on tomorrow in Invercargill. Yeah.
Well, that's probably just as well, really. In terms of getting you out and talking just before a show, because it'll
exactly.
be just, what time is it on tomorrow?
Seven.
Seven.
So we'd be in the middle of the show right
yeah,
now.
I wouldn't expect you to come out in the middle of a show. I was a bit worried that we'd actually done that. I knew it was close to a staging night. When did you first start working with Rodney?
Well, actually, we met in 1999 and started working that year. Actually, I met him the year before, but we started working together in 1999. When we both were a lot younger, and we were working in Touch Compass Dance Trust back then. I got invited to choreograph. It was my very first piece of choreography that was, you know, a paid contract when I'd left my training. And Rodney had been a founding member or a founding performer of that company that was directed by Catherine Chappelle. Yeah.
Had he had his accident then?
Yes, he had. So he had his accident when he was 19, yeah. So I would have met him when he was mid-20s, yeah.
What impression, what impact did his dance make on you the first time you saw it then?
Well, Rodney's a pretty special performer, and he's just kind of very interested in people of all walks of life and really open. And he was, you know, when you're going in and you're a fresh graduate and you're kind of learning about choreography, I just had no idea about mixed ability dance or how to choreograph on someone who was using a wheelchair or what that might mean for their body and how I might be able to, you know, instruct, because I wasn't having lived experience of that. So he just was really awesome. He just basically opened my eyes and really allowed me to play with him, just like any performer would do in a professional environment. And and it was really actually very inspirational and kind of had a big impact on me for other choreographic projects in the future, because it taught me so much about the engineering of a chair, the sort of the manoeuvres, and being very playful with this piece of engineering. He's a pretty special person. So we became friends back then, and then we'd always wanted to make something together, but we went our separate ways. And then I heard he was back in town about 6 years ago, and I rang him up. So that was the beginning of making Meri Meri together.
The music that we heard in that little grab, who was that?
So Eden Mulholland.
So
he composed that. And the interesting thing about that is that Eden then also joined. So I, back in 99, was choreographed on the company, but then I got invited to be a dancer in the company. So I joined as a performer. So I danced with Rodney. And then Eden was overseas and I said, you've got to come and dance for this company, because he was dancing back then. So he danced in that company before he left dancing full-time to become full-time musician.
I didn't realise he'd been a dancer first.
He had, and so we were all friends. Well, it's how we met through that company, which had a really strong influence on us, getting to know each other. So it was a no-brainer asking Eden to write the music for that,
Well, that's rather special, having a musician who's also been a dancer, in terms of knowing what to write.
Yes, well, when you've been a dancer, you have that, again, that kind of embodied understanding of what's going on in the room, and the process of making music or making new music for dance becomes more innate. I work with other musicians other than Eden, and that's awesome as well, but there's just that sort of you don't have to talk as much with him, because he's just intuitive.
Yeah. How much does the music, that if Eden, you asked Eden to write the music for Meri Meri?
Yes.
Did you do your choreography before or after you'd heard the music?
A mixture. So it was very much happening at the same time. So the very first workshop that we did, he was actually overseas, and he wrote samples and things for us, and we were sending him samples of sounds and things, and so we're working like that. But then the next process, he was in the room and writing alongside us making. So things would happen, like Rodney was humming a song one day. It was an old waiata that I'd never heard before, and Eden hadn't, but it was beautiful. And we asked him what that was, and he said it was a waiata that his grandmother had sung to him as a child. So we researched it, couldn't find it anywhere, so we got the oral translation of it, but and then we got a our Motanga Māori expert to finish it. So we kind of created a new part to it. So, things like that would happen in the room. It's quite fun.
Looking at, there's a little YouTube clip, which is a little promo for the tour of Meri Meri.
Yeah.
And so the sound bite that I played doesn't do that justice, because one can, because you want to talk about the role that lighting plays and what... It's difficult for me to describe what I'm seeing, apart from it's quite dazzling, and the way that Rodney and you have used his body and screens and lighting to make something that seems initially it's just a man in a wheelchair, but it's so much more than that.
Yes, so that's working with the lighting designer and the AV designer to create a sense, a kind of a world that he would sit in, so he could tell his story. So Meri Meri is not just a dance piece. It's more like, I guess it's like a live movement documentary work where he does move, but he also tells stories from his life. So it is more theatrical than a normal dance show would be. And the lighting helps to play characters, to kind of give people a sense of space, that's the space he might have been in. We also use photographs from his time living on the streets in San Francisco. So the set is designed like a book and also a diamond shape, so it also represents the whare or the top of the whare. So it's been specifically designed to represent both of those items, those symbols, and we project these things into that space, so he's living inside these memories. That the projection creates a sense of liveness and character. Yeah,
I'm just looking at a still right now, and I'm just guessing that the projection, well, it looks to me like a map.
Yes, that's right. That's a map. That actually is the map of San Francisco, But it gets projected onto his back, and the map of San Francisco, or the part that he was, you know, living in on the streets and working as dancer while he was over there, looks like a pair of wings. So if you reduce it right down, so the lighting, the AV designer created this projection that starts on Rodney's back like a pair of wings, and then it expands across the whole space, and then it fills in, and then you realise it's actually San Francisco. Yeah.
As a director, then what's your role in terms of, because it just looking at this, it's things like you've got very strong creative forces, including your own,
yes,
to mould here. So what does a director do?
In this case, my role is to hold the space for the artists to make the work together collaboratively. So in order to do that, my job is to allow people to be creative and then to pull out the strongest things. I also guess my role was to construct the order of the material that was created, because we, you know, had memories and stories and music, and then that all needs to be formulated into beginning, a middle and end. So I worked with a dramaturg on that component as well. So we had, strong creatives in that space holding the design, the music, the light, the set, and then the writing.
Who were the people behind lighting, AV, and the set?
So Rowan Pierce is the AV designer, and we had Ruby Rayhanna Wilson as our lighting designer. Yeah. And we've had, because we tour this piece to all sorts of places, we have had lots of other artists fill in for those people when they can't come on the road. So at the moment, for example, Eden is actually in Australia, so he couldn't come. Well, he could now that the borders are open, but but that wasn't actually the case when we were going to be doing the tour. So we were like, who are we going to get to do the music? And he just, without even thinking about it, said it had to be his brother. So we're actually performing with Julian Mulholland and Joel Mulholland. Lots of people will know of his work. And so he's absorbed the music from his brother, and that's really beautiful because it keeps that sort of connection and friendship and family sense in the work. And we have other lighting designers and AV operators that have come into the tour, and they add, you know, they're doing the design of the designers, but they add their own take as well, which is really cool.
Is the role of lighting and sound in dance, does it have sufficient respect?
I think that I have huge respect for it, because it's, you know, in terms of dance, without light you wouldn't have a show. So you know it's the main artistic form, and you know that allows us to see.
Is light even more important than sound for you in dance? Because with no light, you can't see movement.
I'd put them equal. For me, they're very, very important, both together. And I have done performances without lighting, like outside, and I have done performances without sound. But for me, doing performances without sound is almost impossible, because, you know, silence is not actually true. There's always something, there's always an ambient sound. But no, for me, they're both really important. They're both massive storytellers of a work, and they really create a sense of, you know, with dance, sometimes people say it's abstract, but that's actually an energy, and it's like the sound and the light provide the theatrical base, you know, the emotive drive and force for how we're seeing, you know, the colour palette like reduces down into the cools or the warms, and that instantly has an emotional response on the audience or the viewer. And the same with the music, it's really telling us so much.
Because I've always thought about dance and choreography in terms of choreographers come from the dancing world, and I haven't really thought until you came through with this topic, thought about, well, how much of the creative drive, the creative energy, the thought that goes into imagining a new piece comes from people who aren't from a dancing discipline initially.
Oh, absolutely. I call both the composer and the lighting designer directors in some respects, because they drive the work. They're making directorial decisions about how the work will be perceived. And so, and especially within our company, that's the way the direction in which they push light or challenge light or create you know, AV imagery is really, you know, such a huge part of the choreography. And these artists are working choreographically within their forms. So, you know, they're using music with movement, and they're using light with movement, or moving light. And so, yeah, even though they're not dancers themselves, they're choreographing.
Eden Mulholland, so he's not there, but his siblings are.
Mm-hmm.
How important for you is it when you're dancing or doing a dance performance that the music is being performed at the same time as the dance itself? In other words, it's live.
Well, in Mere Mere, it's this beautiful connection about storytelling through the music. So all the music is written very much in response, direct response to Eden's story, Rodney's stories. So Eden crafted these pieces, and the thing about them is they have this connection. So it's like he can play with Rodney and support him. You know, live show, sometimes something goes wrong, and they know the show so well, so they can fill those gaps if something happens. And the music being live allows that beautiful kind of live performance and physical connection between the two performers. But, you know, recorded music is also really cool. I do lots of stuff with that, but there's just something extra special and amazing when you have live music,
I was musing before we got you on tonight that I remember going to see, and it's a completely different kind of dance, but I remember seeing Swan Lake with the New Zealand Ballet, and they had the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra in the pit. And it just the whole thing seemed to lift several notches because of the live music there.
Oh, absolutely! It's beautiful when you have live music. It's really very special. Yeah, stunning.
Now you're halfway through this tour with Mere Mere?
Yes, we have two legs of it, and so tomorrow night is the last leg of the South Island. We actually kicked off in Auckland. Then we went to Bannockburn and at the Bannockburn Hall there.
Bannockburn?
Bannockburn, I know. Yes, and it was
And
cool.
I'm not saying that you shouldn't go. I'm just saying it's wonderful you're going to a place like Bannockburn.
I know. I hadn't heard of it before, so I had to look it up. I was like, wow, this is awesome. It's part of the Festival of Colour that they organised. They organised performances not just in the main centre in Wanaka. They have performances out in the rural areas, which is really cool. So it was beautiful, actually, in the old Bannockburn Hall, which has been restored by the community. And we had over 60 people that came, which was really lovely. So it was very intimate, but such a beautiful experience because everybody's very close because it's a small space.
Mm.
And then we went into the main centre of Wanaka and performed there last night. And then we're here in Invercargill. But then we head up north again and we do Hamilton, Tauranga, Taranaki and Whangarei. Yeah.
You're also performing Owls Do Cry. Now, I'm guessing that's something to do with Janet Frame. And I've only left you a few minutes, about 3 minutes to talk about that. But I am curious.
Yes. So Janet Frame's first novel, Owls Do Cry, we created, so it was working with Red Leap, who Red Leap Theatre Company from Auckland, who invited me to come in and work on that performance. And yeah, so that finished last night. It's doing another tour later in the year, but that finished last night in Dunedin. So we had two shows on the road at the same time. It was really, really exciting.
And is that a relatively literal adaptation of a novel narrative to the ballet?
No. So Owls Do Cry, the stage production, is a contemporary response to the book, and it uses movement, light, lighting design, and music, also written by Eden Mulholland, and with six incredible performers, actors who dance. And yeah, it's a response to her novel, and it's a response to the writing style, and it's a response to sort of her experimentation of novel writing. And so we translated that and created a contemporary response to the book, which was really, really exciting. It's a fun show.
Did you go to, you went to Dunedin and Oamaru?
Well, I was doing Medi-Medi, so I was with them when they did the Christchurch season, and then we were like travelling at the same time, and we were in Wanaka together. So I did the, you know, I was with them in Wanaka, and then they went to Oamaru and Dunedin independent. I couldn't make that one because I had Medi-Medi. So yeah, but they've done that show quite a bit, so they could go without me, which was cool.
And Medi-Medi, was there any link to the town Medi-Medi?
No, there isn't. But I love the fact that there is a town. The Medi is the like patu,
yeah.
And Rodney named the piece Medi-Medi. He named the work. He doubled the word. So yeah, because he it's based on a carving that he'd done for his cousin's 40th birthday. So when I asked him to name the piece, that was the name he came back with. So yeah.
Malia, it's been lovely speaking with you again. Enjoy the rest of the tour.
Thank you. Lovely talking with you as well.
I hope the show goes well in Invercargill tomorrow night.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Thanks, Malia.
Okay, you take care.
That's Malia Johnston, talking contemporary dance, and she's in the thick of it right now, touring with Rodney Bell. The show is called Meri Meri. Music is by Eden Mulholland, and I discovered tonight at Eden was himself a dancer before he became a professional musician.